God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. Greed's not good and God's not dead. I don't care what Nietzsche or Ayn Rand said. The blood of every man is red, and I'm not going to war. They justify all the things they do with convoluted logic and waves still pound upon the sand and will when they're gone. God's not dead, he's merely hiding.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Les Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet the Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Les Visible.
And many salutations and replicating genuflections to you all here on planet Earth in these times. Tonight, the dog poet is hovering above Zio-Ogre. Zio-Ogre Central in the satanic kingdom of Invisible London, where they're passing laws to make it okay for a 12-year-old child to take puberty-retardant drugs so that they can take a few moments and decide whether they want to change their gender. As we all know, 12 years old is a perfectly responsible age for anyone to make life-changing decisions like this, prior to any actual sexual capacity or experience. Yeah, that makes sense. It's not like there's any evidence of periods of gender confusion during puberty, and this will take all the confusion out of the mix. Let's just dispense with any idea that the cosmos knows what it's doing when it makes you male or female, and then just assume there are massive errors that need to be surgically corrected. But why stop there? What if a 12-year-old kid decides he'd be happier being a dog or a bear? Well, that's perfectly logical. What if the kid believes it really is a bear or a dog trapped in a boy or a girl's body? Shouldn't that child be given a series of dog or bear DNA injections? And let's remember the sex of the bear or the dog, too, because that may be important as well. Now they're going to be teaching gay history in California schools. Of course, you don't have to be confused about why this is all happening. And it has nothing to do with gay people or any other people being allowed to live in society with a certain minimal guarantee of tolerance. That's already there. All those hyped up reports of bashing aside, it's the same thing with all that anti-Semitic nonsense. They've found in most cases that these acts are committed by the very people claiming to being the victims. In France, they found that 90% of all anti-Semitic acts were being committed by the very victims crying out against them. It's a strategy, and it works. It especially works if you own the press and the government. Having more rights than anyone else, while claiming you have less, is a good strategy if you intend to exercise a greater license and commit more offenses than more offenses than those you claim to have been committed against yourself. What it is you scream out in pain just before you hit someone else. Yes, it's getting worse and worse. It's getting more and more absurd. It's getting cartoon-like in a dark zombie world sort of a way. But you shouldn't let it bother you because it's all an act. It's a performance of predictable insanity which follows the periodic and classic arrival of massive imbalance. It stands to reason when things go out of balance that the absurd and cartoon-like will appear. We've entered a cultural period that is similar in many ways to Grand Guignol. It's a puppet show with horrible and macabre under and overtones. It's routine, really. It's something that comes into being whenever we lose our way. Let's say you go hiking in the Denali Park area of Alaska. There are approved trails, well-worn paths that move through relatively safe landscapes. And then, let's say you go off the path and into the rough, and you just keep on going. Progress will eventually get difficult at some point, if not right at the beginning. Your food and water situation could get critical, depends on who you are, what you have and what you know. Certainly dangers will be around. Humanity's gone off the rails and into the wild. So at every level, incipient dysfunction and insanity is making an appearance. Signs appear to tell you to go back the way you came. These signs can appear in the form of dangerous animals, rock slides, terrible storms, hunger and thirst. There's a loosely knit little group of predators who are herding humanity into paddocks and holding pens for no good purpose. They're instrumental in poisoning your water and food, your environment, and your hearts and minds. They're pretty much all psychopaths, and they enjoy the work. They do it for entertainment and because it gives them a sexual thrill. It isn't necessary to murder Palestinian women and children, but they do it all because they enjoy doing it, and they enjoy thumbing their nose at the world and laughing about it. They take pleasure from it. It gets them high, and it turns them on. You have to understand that this is how they see it and how it is, really. It's not just the Zio ogres, although they're a large part of it. There are any number of other ogres who have appeared in this time and place for the purpose of the grand denouement, being staged at a theater in you, or coming to a theater in you soon. There's a projector and a screen, there's a director and a producer and actors, all the usual components of a film that is being played and filmed at the same time, while being a memory too. These are all parts of you. This is a thing to remember as you go through what is coming in these transformative times. It's all part of you, and many things are not necessarily true, but thinking makes them so. Fear and love are both amplifiers. They cannot exist in the same space at the same time. They displace each other. Human fear smells like anger to animals. So what do you suppose the effect of love is? I'm mentioning this in regard to walking into the Denali Mountains and encountering whatever it is you might find there. Are you walking in fear or walking in love? As fear and panic increase, and how could they not, the landscape and the way it appears also changes because the root of all of these things is in the mind. If the mind becomes unstable, it's another kind of Fukushima with another kind of fallout. The conditions of the moment are similar to the Sorcerer's Apprentice sequence in that film Fantasia, where Mickey Mouse uses magic to get the brooms to carry water, but then he can't get them to stop, so he took an axe and began chopping at the brooms, and they began doubling in number. He had a real catastrophe on his hands till the master appeared and set everything right with his power. That's where we find ourselves. Psychopaths are driven by their compulsion to torture and torment others. The results have gotten out of hand, so they're resorting to much uglier actions to stabilize the environment, but they are merely doubling the troubles and no doubt enjoying that as well in some way, I think. I know this is a clumsy example. It's difficulty getting the words out. It's a clumsy example, but hopefully it gives a little perspective. Don't worry. Their master is going to appear in an unexpected way. It's difficult when we exist in our separated selves to have the kind of complete faith needed to accept that this is all scripted and under control. Children do not exist in the separated self, and so their faith is whole. That is why Jesus said one must become like a little child. Now, of course, the psychopaths are making puberty retardant drugs available to children for the contemplation of sex change operations. So some of them, never mind. I was going to say something, but it wasn't funny. Now, maybe to a psychopath. It's becoming a horror movie in some ways, and there are two kinds of audiences for it. It's like the people who ride on a roller coaster. Some of them are screaming in fear, and some of them are screaming in excitement. It's the same ride from two different perspectives. We take things different ways, being different people, and having different degrees of self-separation. That's just how it goes. As well, we're all each exposed to different planetary associations. Some of us are more able, but we all have help. Well, life blithefully canters on as Fukushima radiates. Storms rage across the earth, especially the U.S., attended by droughts and homeland security thugs created by the same forces that created the terror events they are ironically created to prevent. TSA agents perform ritual frottage on small children, instilling fear and shame in the youngest so that the following abuses will be more easily tolerated. It's happening on a wide scale as the bulk of the population awaits the latest heart attack sandwich from the food industry. You'd think that by this time, true concern would have spread through the countryside and around the world like a massive fire alarm, but it hasn't. This is because the same force that permits the psychopaths to continue keeps the rest of us asleep as well. It's a difficult concept to grasp, but it's true. It's all under control, and it is all under the control of a single force who knows everything. That force has been bringing some number of us awake by stages. It'll soon be awakening entire populations without any effort at all. It's important to recognize the degree of control that is exercised by the divine ineffable. It's complete and absolute and maintains the entire spectacle of the universe with more power than it takes to do that, always in reserve. The sun of the ineffable never reaches the zenith. There is always more than is being used in reserve. Free will is useful for one purpose, and that is to seek the opportunity to surrender it to the simple will, that single simple will from which all will and all power proceeds. Free will moves toward destruction in every direction it can go except one. All terms of existence for the separated will are temporary. All lead inevitably back to the source. In order for us to be what the divine desires us to be, we have to have the opportunity to seek the divine of our own free will. This provides the chance to come into a kind of equality with the divine that makes it possible for us to become friends of the divine. It's as Jesus said, "Call me not master, because the servant knows not what his master is about. Rather, call me friend." That is the position we should be after, and for all of those who reach any of the heavens, our states of grace that provide any degree of freedom from bondage to the wheel of birth and death, only a certain amount achieve the status of friends of the divine. Look into all the holy books, and you will find that each of the avatars, prophets, and truly wise had friends. There's a wonderful mystery hidden here, and it could be it takes a certain kind of person to see it. I've been looking for God all my life. I met him and didn't even know it had happened till later on. At the time, I was encouraged to stay, and of all the turnings and changes of my life, that is the one I regret the most. I didn't know what had occurred. I was so under the spell of the events of the day that I couldn't step out of it. I kept saying, "I don't know," because that is what he had kept saying through the day, and it had finally penetrated so deeply into me it had become a visceral reality. I honestly knew I didn't know. I had three junkies with me from San Francisco that I'd taken to this beach at Big Sur, California, hoping to get them off the heroin by giving them LSD. That didn't work very well. And when they wanted to go, I went with them. Maybe that's how it was supposed to be, but I always try to keep it in mind now that you have to pay attention and look for the presence of the divine in everything, because you do never know. When I speak to the divine, I try to ask for those things that I've come to realize are the most important possessions one can have. I ask for the presence and the awareness of the presence and for the divine intoxication that attends it. I've gotten high so many times in my life, hoping to storm the gates of heaven, but it never lasts. I keep trying. I know there's an intoxication that is the essence of what I've been after, and I ask for it. I ask for my shortcomings to be removed and replaced by the qualities of God. I ask that the obstacles to my self-realization be removed. I ask that the great love be awakened in my heart so that it may rule, motivate, and inspire my every thought, word, and deed. I ask to be named a friend of the divine. There are a few similar quests that I also ask for, but no need to itemize all of it here at the moment. You get the idea. Ask for the things that are important. Don't ask for useless things. I mean, you may well get them, but they'll hold you back, and you'll suffer for them. We suffer for all of these things. Scarcely a day goes by when some combination of these requests, and often all of them, don't get asked for by me. It's important to ask for these things and to be persistent. It's important to keep what you really want at the forefront of your mind, because there are always things waiting to replace them. It's important to keep the intention of reaching the divine at the forefront of your mind, because there are always things looking to replace that. And the divine will put things there to see if you're inclined to be distracted. That's what happens, you know. You know, it's like a child crying and screaming for its mother, and the mother comes over and puts a toy in its hand to distract it or some other thing, you know. But finally, you know, the kid just doesn't stop screaming. The mother has to pick it up, and that's what you're after. I'm telling you this because of what I've encountered and because we're all similar in some very basic ways. Excuse me. If you don't stop, if you don't quit, you can't fail. If you recognize there's only one goal of any consequence ever, and you keep it at the forefront of your mind, you will not fail. Never mind about your imagined sins and failures, your shortcomings and inconsistencies. Keep your eye on the ball. There's only one game in town. If you've got an idea that there's anything else, real or important, you're in for a disappointment. Everything else disappoints. There is nothing else. Well, and I say well, let me say it again. We've come to the end of another broadcast, a slightly more disjointed and less cohesively specific show than what has become usual, but it happens. Of course it happens. There it is. There it was. So in this following week, keep your hearts and minds upon the one controlling, containing, and unveiling all of what you are, all of what you are, and all of what you're passing through, and you'll have a sure and sufficient guide. I'll see you next week, if there is one. And that said, aloha and aru.
You can see him in the morning when the sun is.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSIC Radio Network of Stations.